Are you ready to take charge of your health journey? Look no further than Trinity School of Natural Health. With their flexible online programs, you can receive the comprehensive education you need to care for your loved ones or step into the thriving field of natural health. Why choose Trinity? Because their programs offer more than just coursework. You'll interact with experienced instructors, connect with like-minded peers, and even participate in optional live events to hone your skills. If you've ever thought about becoming a certified natural health professional, the CNHP program at Trinity School of Natural Health is the perfect certification course. You'll equip yourself with the knowledge and skills to make a real difference in the lives of others. Turn your passion for natural health into a rewarding career. Visit trinityschool.org today to learn more about the Certified Natural Health Professional Certification Program. Go to trinityschool.org. That's trinityschool.org. Trinity School of Natural Health. Transform your life. Transform the world.
What's up, this your boy Lil Duval, and check out my podcast, Conversations with Unc, on the Black Effect Podcast Network. Each and every Tuesday, Conversations with Unc podcast feature casuals and in-depth talk about ebbs and flows of life and the pursuit of happiness. Unlike my work on stage, I tap into a more serious and sensitive side to give life advice and simply offer words of encouragement, yet remind folks to never forget to laugh. Every Tuesday, listen to Conversations with Unc, hosted by Lil Duval on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Presented by AT&T. Connecting changes everything.
When you buy Kroger brand products, you feel like you're winning. That's because they offer proven quality at lower than low prices. In fact, we guarantee that you and your family will love how Kroger brand products taste, or you get your money back. So next time you're shopping for the family, look for delicious Kroger brand products, because they'll make you all feel like you're winning. Shop now, in-store, or online. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
Do you guys, is this how you guys record normally? You're remote?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
I live in Italy, so.
Yeah, and I'm in New York, so it's a reasonable time difference that I'm sure y'all have found.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah.
Unless you have an Australian guest, then boy howdy.
Right, not for the time difference, for their wild antics. It's just, so how do you deal?
For the spiders that come out of the screen.
Yeah, uh-huh. Welcome to Let's Learn Everything, the show where we learn about anything and everything interesting. Today, we have two very special guests who are going to be asking us a science question.
What?
And then we have some miscellaneous questions of our own. See how they like it. My name is Caroline, and I want to tell you a little bit about our guests. Separately, we have the host of Creature Feature with a background in psychology and evolutionary biology. And of course, we also have our four-time Jeopardy champion. Together, they're the hosts of Secretly Incredibly Fascinating, our neighbours over at Max Fun.
Hello.
Woo! It's great to be here. Thank you all so much.
Ah, we're so excited.
And my name is Alex Schmidt, and this is my friend Katie Golden, who does it with me.
That's me. Hello.
We will hear about their question in a second, but of course, Ella and Tom also have some questions for our hosts. So let's hear those first.
We're still here, unfortunately.
My name's Tom, and I'll be asking our guest, Katie, how does your degree in evolutionary biology inform my favorite Twitter account, Birds Right Activist?
Yes.
My name's Ella, and I'll be asking our guest, Alex, how did you bring the buffalo emoji into the world?
Yay! Oh, I'm excited to talk about it. Yeah.
Yes.
And now this is where both of you guys speak in unison.
Alex and Katie, would you like to share with us?
Yeah, we love this show. And this seemed like a joyful opportunity to look into the question of, have birds ever been to space?
Space birds, wonderful space
birds. Because there's so many
birds
on the Earth. Have they made it to space or not?
Ooh.
Just like flying high enough, you mean?
That was where my brain was, like, just by like flapping up there or in a bird.
They have the advantage. They've had years of advantage over us. They can already fly.
That's so true.
What are they doing, birds? Hold on.
Tiny bird rockets.
Yeah. Anything off the ground is a home game for them. It's true. It's a home match. Very easy.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm so interested. Thinking about the...
Yeah.
Because they're flying already. So if they're in space, how does that mess with them?
Yeah, there's problems.
Before we answer all of these questions. First off, thank you so much for coming on to the show. We Yay. Are so excited to have you both here. We just want to know, before we begin, can you tell us a little bit about yourselves, a little bit about your podcast, and also what your backgrounds are? Because I know, Katie, you've got, is it a degree in psychology and evolutionary biology? We want to know about you as well, Alex. So tell us all.
Yeah, Katie first. I will settle the degree right now. Yeah.
Well, my degree is in bird astronauts.
No.
obviously.
No, so my degree is in psychology, and I studied psychology with evolutionary biology. So I really wanted to have a degree in animal behavior, but it didn't exist at the time, at least at the school I went to. So I kind of just DIY'd my own learning path. But yeah, so it's so I really love evolutionary biology and specifically animal behavior, because I'm interested in human psychology as well, and in the ways in which we are similar to animals. That's always fascinated me when we have behaviors that you see both in animals and people. And I think it's so important to, I mean, I think sometimes we don't give animals enough credit. We're like, well, you know, they have this behavior, but it's probably just for some boring evolutionary reason. It's like, actually, maybe they are playing. Maybe they are having fun. Maybe they do feel this, you know, maybe they do feel compassion or love. And so I think that it's really, really cool to look at behaviors of animals, both very scientifically, but also giving them enough credit as conscious beings that they have really complex and fun. Like if you see a little elephant and it looks like it's playing, maybe it's just having fun.
Yeah, that's a nice thought. I like
it.
That's so lovely. Oh my goodness.
Plus, I just want to see a little elephant all the time, you know, so to have an additional thought about it is extra good.
Now's a good time to introduce my new soccer league, Baby Elephants.
I would pay good money to
actually watch that. We once talked about if elephants are left or right-handed. So this comes right into all of the stuff we love here.
Which tusk would an elephant use to bat a ball around? I've got to know.
Yeah, to hit a penalty shot.
Do their trunks swing left or right?
Yeah.
And Alex?
Yeah, I, as far as my education, my degree was mainly in history. And also then I studied a lot of media, different things. And I think I got excited about science kind of outside of that. And also then my summer job as a teenager and then growing from there was as a zoo tour guide. So that was probably one of my more scientific activities at Brookfield Zoo outside Chicago, Illinois.
So you've seen the baby elephants playing.
So you've coached Little League.
I'd say my main job was to show people a baby polar bear. Like they would get on the tram and they would say, when do we see the baby polar bear named Hudson that I've heard about in all of Chicago media? And I'd be like, later. And they'd be like, not soon enough. Don't like that. Get us there sooner, Florida.
And just jump off the train.
Yeah.
Oh my goodness, that's fantastic.
And then with making our podcast Secretly Incredibly Fascinating, we get to find out about mainly history and science are kind of the two styles of story, but it's about why things people think are ordinary are amazing. It's a real joy to get to make it.
And it's a wonderful podcast, and I imagine we have quite a lot of overlap in listeners anyway.
Definitely.
Because our topics often align. In fact, one of your topics from a while ago about period products actually inspired something I did on the podcast. So
fantastic.
That was lovely. That's wonderful.
Yeah. So I think if anyone hasn't listened to it, they should go straight away. After this.
Our source. Dibs.
We're just like a big podcasting stew. We keep adding in ingredients, letting it simmer.
Oh, that's so nice. And yeah, part of being overjoyed about being relatively new to joining Maximum Fun is being with shows like you guys who are awesome. So thank you. Yeah.
Shall we dive into your question? So do you want to say it again?
It's, have birds ever been to space?
Space birds, wonderful space birds coming right up. They are in space.
We have a theme for the episode.
And so this is just a yes or no question, right?
Yeah.
Right.
It is just yes. So yes.
I want to say yes, but maybe, like, I know Tom joked about it, but I know that some birds can fly very, very high.
No
so
way.
I wonder how close
no
they
no.
are.
No.
How it's fun a low Earth would orbit? That be if that's the answer?
So my thought is like, I haven't seen a video of a bird on the ISS like bothering an astronaut, but I don't know.
But the last time we talked about this, when we talked about space babies, like and I covered some animals that have been born in space, Tom, yeah. you didn't know that a bunch of animals had been
a bunch
to space.
Of them. Yeah.
I've never heard of birds being to space, but I also hadn't heard of frogs or jellyfish or flies. But, you know.
I also wonder what counts as space, you know?
Yeah. And what counts as bird?
What? Are birds real?
What's in? I gotta say yes.
You gotta enlighten us maybe a little bit.
Yeah.
Yeah. I wanna start peeling this one apart.
Yeah. This is we mainly found about human space missions bringing them to space, and then also looked briefly into can birds just fly themselves up there without our help? Like, do they have nice. To wait for the bus to leave?
Oh,
you know.
I'm so glad. I'm so glad we all share the same brain cell.
Yeah. But also, why would you take a bird into space?
Yeah.
That is a better question.
Are you trying to see if a bird can fly in space?
Oh, that's such a good question. Can a bird fly in space? Can a bird fly? Are we going to answer that? Or am I yeah. we're getting ahead of myself? I'm getting excited.
Yeah, apparently the super short answer is they can't fly in the vacuum of space, and they can kind of flap around in a space station.
And it's extremely funny. Very, very funny.
Do we have a video? Do we have a link to this?
There is one brief video.
Should we approach this question maybe more straightforwardly okay. instead of jumping straight
Sorry, to... I'm so excited. Do you have an order you want to go through things in? Because we will follow your order. You just have to tell yeah. just have to guide us through.
Yeah, let's do a quick summary of birds on space missions. Because it turns out no, they yeah. can't fly themselves to space. It's just too high. Unfortunately. They can't just go there themselves.
I'm not that surprised by that answer.
I'm not surprised, but I am disappointed.
Have they really yeah. tried before yet? Like, have we asked birds? Maybe they just haven't tried.
They're just not trying hard enough.
There's like, hey, there's no chips. There's no French fries up in space. So what am I going to do?
If we dangle some French fries off the space station, would birds fly to space?
Yeah, if you put some chippies on a space rocket, a seagull would definitely try, because they will try anything for chips. Do we know, incidentally, how high a bird has ever been able to fly up?
Yeah, let's do that, because it turns out, you know, no birds can reach space from Earth. Apparently, NASA says there's a boundary called the Kármán line, Karman, which is sort of the official boundary from the atmosphere to space, which is 100 kilometers up. Or about 62 miles.
Okay.
Wow.
Okay.
And birds can't really go that high, but apparently the highest flying bird species is Ruppell's griffon vulture.
Yes.
Oh.
Which is an African vulture species that can go about as high as passenger jets.
Holy wow.
And we partly know that because one went into the engine of one, unfortunately. So that was a way of measuring it. But they are
a way
there.
To find out.
Let's assign the blame appropriately. The engine ate the bird, turned it into bird pudding. Really sad, because these are actually critically endangered birds.
Oh, no.
And I love a vulture. They are really amazing birds, and I think they sometimes creep people out because they have those bald heads, but those bald faces are really important when they are eating carrion, because they actually like to be clean. They don't want to be really nasty, so having that bald face makes it a lot easier to dive into some carrion, and
what?
It doesn't get stuck in their feathers. So yeah, they're actually quite clean birds.
That's amazing. I had never thought about that before.
And I would recommend anyone listening to go and look at a picture of a baby vulture and vulture chick, because they are so adorable.
Yes.
They look like they're wearing little fur coats.
They are so cute. They're like, they're voguing the whole time. Put them on the runway.
It is high fashion.
They are cute.
Oh no.
Yeah, and they're extraordinarily high flying. That bird can get up to heights a bit over 36,000 feet.
Wow.
Which is about 10.6 kilometers up.
Jeez.
Which is, you know, very high, but nowhere near space. So
yeah. Quite a bit shorter than space.
Yeah, because space is 100 kilometers.
They have a special adaptation of their blood that it's a protein adaptation that makes their blood much more efficient at transporting oxygen. And that's how they can survive at such a high altitude. Which is, you know, really fantastic.
Are you kidding me?
That's so incredible.
That's so cool. Yeah.
You might say secretly incredibly fascinating.
hey.
This could be in some creature feature. I'm having the maximum amount of fun right now.
Well, let's learn everything about it. Huh?
Yeah.
Yeah. Huh? My brother. No. Okay. 4 seconds. Okay. Never mind.
I'm not rewarding that, Tom.
I'm just amazed that like these adaptations are. I don't know. They're wild. Like I'm imagining like a cyclist when they do like blood doping, and then like that's amazing. That's nuts.
Got a blood dope with vulture blood. Don't do it. Right. Sorry. I got it. Legally, I have to say, don't do it. They're endangered.
Yeah, oh, that's true.
And that's the only reason why you shouldn't do it.
That's the only reason. Yeah.
You'll cycle much faster, but then you'll keep stopping to feed, you know? It's not good. It's not a good thing to do.
Munch, munch, munch.
But yeah, so it turns out birds can't fly themselves there. They have to ride our ships if they want to go to space.
Yeah, that's sad, but I understand birds. It's okay. We're putting too much pressure on them already. It's fine.
So I guess the next step is putting them on ships for some reason. And how often are we doing that and why? And how do they cope?
Or my next thought is like, are we taking like chickens into space to lay eggs?
Oh yeah. Things. Do they do have they had chicks in space? Have eggs hatched in space?
Space babies?
I guess another question is which birds?
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
This question topic has really turned around where we're just like bombarding you with loads of questions.
This is everything I wondered. And yeah, the super short version is it's pretty close to that chickens and eggs curiosity. There are two countries that have tried to put some form of eggs or birds in space.
USA.
It was the
USA.
Soviets first. And starting in 1979, they tried to bring the Japanese quail species, bring their eggs up.
Okay.
So we really lost the space race, is what you're saying.
We lost. we beat them to the moon, and they were like, how do we counter birds? You know? But and the other program is the U.S. and with chicken eggs. That was the bird we picked in the U.S.
So it did start with eggs.
Space farming, I think, was the goal.
Space farming. I like that.
That was
I
the
like
Russians'
that.
Goal. Yeah.
Yeah, see if we could get a sustainable food source in space with delicious quails.
Whoa.
Yeah, no joke.
I guess that's kind of makes sense. It seems a bit preemptive. Too. To start with chickens and not just like some kind of vegetable, you know?
Who needs grains to feed the chicken when we could just take the chicken straight up there, right? You know?
Yeah.
Cut out the middleman.
Yeah.
I don't know why they didn't already have them in nugget form, but yeah.
That's true. That's such a space age way to get that food up there, right? Like fish sticks and stuff and all the finest frozen dinner approaches to meats. Do that. Yeah, great.
Like when you go to the museum and you get the freeze-dried full chicken. It should have been that.
I guess that they thought that if they could see if these birds could reproduce and lay eggs in space, then you just keep the birds there, maybe feed them space grain, and then just kind of the bird floats around and then pops out an egg, and then you've got space breakfast.
Yummy.
Yeah, because that's pretty much what the Russians wanted to do. And so
it doesn't sound like it was successful based on your tone.
Yeah, so it was successful-ish, which is neat.
Oh.
The best kind.
It turns out like both programs wanted to see what happens if you fertilize eggs on Earth, bring them to space, and then either hatch them there or study them there and hatch them back on Earth.
Mm.
And the Russians successfully hatched quails in space.
Wow.
And then American chicken eggs hatched back on Earth successfully too.
This, I can't believe I missed this in the Space Babies episode. This is a...
Oh, and that episode is amazing, by the way. It was very helpful for putting this together. Okay. So thank you. Yeah.
Brilliant.
Are you ready to take charge of your health journey? Look no further than Trinity School of Natural Health. With their flexible online programs, you can receive the comprehensive education you need to care for your loved ones or step into the thriving field of natural health. Why choose Trinity? Because their programs offer more than just coursework. You'll interact with experienced instructors, connect with like-minded peers, and even participate in optional live events to hone your skills. If you've ever thought about becoming a certified natural health professional, the CNHP program at Trinity School of Natural Health is the perfect certification course. You'll equip yourself with the knowledge and skills to make a real difference in the lives of others. Turn your passion for natural health into a rewarding career. Visit trinityschool.org today to learn more about the Certified Natural Health Professional Certification Program. Go to trinityschool.org. That's trinityschool.org. Trinity School of Natural Health. Transform your life. Transform the world.
Snag a Job is where America goes to hire, with the deepest talent pool in hourly hiring. With access to over 6 million active hourly workers, Snag a Job is the all-in-one solution for hiring high-quality employees who can cover all your needs. On demand, temp to hire, part-time or full-time. You name the position: warehouse worker, retail associate, grocery store clerk, fitness trainer, baker, stylist, bellhop, podcast producer. Yeah, Snag a Job's got a worker for that. With our easy-to-use platform, you're able to seamlessly post and fill available positions quickly, with a dedicated customer support team to provide all the help you need along the way. Kind of nice knowing you have a talent pool like that in your own backyard, right? Snagajob is the partner you need to keep your business running smoothly. So visit snagajob.com or text SNAG to 242424 to talk to an expert. Snagajob.com, where America goes to hire.
Hey, this is Jody Sweetin from the podcast How Rude, Tanneritos. As a nostalgic voice from your past, I'm here to remind you that amongst the stressful and chaotic existence we live in 2024, you deserve to get away. It's time for a vacation, no matter when you're hearing this. And let me tell you how you'll get there. The 2024 Hyundai Santa Fe. Want to bring the family to the mountains with the Santa Fe's available H-Track all-wheel drive? Well, it's got standard third-row seating and available dual wireless charging pads for the kids who just want to stare at their phone and not talk to you. You know what I mean. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
How do they adapt in space and back on land? Surely that would be...
Poorly, basically. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, because one of the things we found is that rats... couldn't really tell up from down very well. They got confused by gravity. So
yeah, they couldn't. I mean, we have this wonderful video. I don't know, Alex, if you want to explain it, but it's actually my favorite video of all time now, of these little quails trying to fly in space.
I don't know what's best for showing it to listeners, but it's a British narrator and it's on YouTube. I don't know who produced it, probably the BBC, but it's about a minute of quails on board the Mir space station around 1990, because they were hatched on Mir by the, I think, still Soviets. The Soviet Union hadn't ended yet.
Let's have a look.
We will throw this in the show notes.
They hatch and they kind of flap and bounce around, and there's one cosmonaut sort of poking it with his finger, like booping it in the microgravity. It's a good time. It's up there if you like an animal video. Everyone is completely open-mouthed and agape, and there's a lot of hands at faces.
This is amazing.
This is going great.
Okay, so just describe it. There is this tiny, tiny little quail chick, and it's very slowly turning over in zero G. And now, oh no, and now it's, yeah, exactly, that's the perfect music. And now they're kind of spinning really fast in the air, flapping and not going anywhere.
Oh.
The bigger quail can slightly fly around.
Fly is a strong word.
They look disorientated.
How is no one not talking about this every moment of every single day? We have this footage.
That's an excellent video. This video only has 23,000 views.
I know.
Everyone should have seen this.
Yeah, turn off, I don't know, Mr. Beast. I don't have anything against him. This is the YouTube video you should see, is the point.
Yeah,
it's great. Yeah.
I'm watching it again. This is so good.
I'm going to share this with this video with everyone I know. If I can, I'll post it to our social media.
Yeah,
so definitely. People can look, because it's wonderful. And it'll be in the show notes.
I'm also just fully blown away that they successfully did that. That's wild that they hatched in space and were hanging out.
Yeah.
Were they able to find out anything? Did they have anything developmentally wrong? Were they okay?
I couldn't find great information on what happened to the quails when they were returned to the Earth. But a blog I found said a few of them returned and they had weird body structure from the lack of gravity and died pretty quickly. Mm. So it seems like they don't do well back on the Earth from this situation.
I also heard that they had like a huge sense of ennui after having seen the vastness of our existence from the perspective of only a god and then returning to Earth. I think I read that somewhere. It was in the paper.
Okay, that was quite good.
Don't acknowledge
I like it.
Too late.
I like
too late. The acknowledgement like train it. Left the station. Here we go.
Because that is one of the hypotheses about if human birth in space is that bone formation would be really bad because of the low, like you'd have really low density bones and they wouldn't, like, you know, you get when a child is born, their skull isn't like fully fused. And all of this, it doesn't necessarily need gravity, but it all kind of plays into it. So maybe they had like bad bone structure ultimately. Poor babies.
Yeah, it seems like they were like, okay, while they were still in space, bones-wise, but then when you put all that Earth gravity on it afterward, it's funny. Because the first American chicken who hatched on Earth after the space trip seemed to be generally fine, because they just lived on Earth the whole time.
So I get, they need to develop on Earth, maybe, to get all of the benefits.
Yeah.
Also, behaviorally, they struggled, right, Alex? They couldn't really mate in space normally.
Oh.
Oh. Yeah. Interesting.
They couldn't perform the cloacal kiss.
Nope. Which is, to be fair, quite an acrobatic stunt anyways on Earth.
Looking at that video and how they were rotating wildly out of control, I can't imagine them aligning themselves very well to rub butts.
Right.
Yeah. It is. Now I'm thinking of every space mission movie where they try to dock the two ships. And it's just, anyway. Similar.
I just keep thinking of 2001, A Space Odyssey, but it's Bird.
Yep.
I'm sorry, I'm watching the video again.
Oh, please. Yeah, apparently the quails were not interested in mating and they weren't really able to consume food very well. And the cosmonauts had to strap them into little harnesses to like make them secured in position enough to receive food and eat it.
Tiny bird space high chairs.
There's something, it is sad to think of, but there's always something I find adorable, and when you have to make tiny implementation for animals in science, like when we learned about, they made a tiny rat straitjacket.
Yeah. Tiny bee helmet.
Yeah, exactly. Very it's good. Horrible, but it's cute.
It's very cute. Very, very cute. I wonder, even if they were able to manage the, like, say you could have some kind of, I don't know, motor control in space, they probably didn't even know who to mate with. Because if they didn't imprint on an adult quail, I don't see how they would have known, like, to, like, I think they would have seen the astronauts as who they should mate with and then maybe start humping, you know.
Wow, yeah.
I don't know who the cosmonauts were. But because there was actually a study on Earth quails where they imprinted them on an albino variant of quails, and they pretty much across the board, all the ones that were imprinted on this albino quail only wanted to mate with albino quails, which is a problem because they're very rare.
Oh. That's so interesting.
I didn't realize the imprinting instinct was so strong for like mating reasons.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's also so interesting because like that's such a sci-fi concept and such a like psychology concept of like the first generation of humans born entirely in space. But you can then also apply that to animals where it's like you will need like this transitory generation that's an in-between and then you can have like the first generation born. It's just so, hadn't thought about that aspect of this whole process. That's amazing.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. We'll need like tiny VR headsets for birds to teach them about, maybe.
The sci-fi books write themselves.
The bird matrix.
And the educational video, like, so you're a quail. Just walking them through what life is.
You may be noticing your body is going through changes. Let's talk feathers.
Love. Very good.
That is fantastic.
Yeah, and it took a Russians a while to like execute this successfully. They tried to do it for the first time in 1979, but they think that the eggs they sent up then received too much radiation and too high of temperatures because one hatched wasn't really like a successful quail, even by space standards. But like one source I found said that they were born without heads. Like a very strange, horrible situation all around.
Boy, howdy.
But in 1990, they successfully hatched like actual quails.
Did you say 1990?
Yeah, yeah.
That is so recent.
But also, it took them like such a long time to get to that point from like unsuccessful to figuring it out, right?
Yeah, that's 11 years of trying.
Yeah.
There's a study kind of ongoing right now where they're taking freeze-dried sperm into space to test if there's radiation damage to it to see if we could...
Human sperm or...?
I think they started with mouse sperm, but I think they're going to do human sperm as well, or they're in the process. So, and they found it was actually fine. So maybe there's something different about birds. Oh, maybe because... in the egg, they're less protected from radiation or something along those lines. Maybe. I don't know.
I mean, eggshells are pretty thin. So they, I mean, there's like sometimes eggs have certain coloration that helps protect them from like sun UV rays here on Earth. But we're also protected by our atmosphere, which, you know, it's like kind of like you can wear sunscreen down on Earth and that protects you from the radiation. But once you're outside of the atmosphere, like I think astronauts have a special room on the space station that they like have to hide in when there's a big wave of radiation that comes from the sun. So it's I don't think the thin shell of an egg would be enough to protect it from that level of radiation.
So what I'm hearing is bird egg sunscreen. There's a market there.
It's so refreshing to hear three words that have never been put together before in the English language. I was thinking like an egg carton that is like has like NASA on it as like gold foil all over it.
Oh yeah,
that might work. Foil, I think, would always work. I don't know much about foil or how it could stop radiation, but I'm gonna say yes. Space foil.
When in doubt, go shiny, you know? Just do something shiny. Great. Can't
the
beat it.
The shinier it is, the higher tech.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Science.
I mean, it is interesting because there's actually, so there are birds living in the Chernobyl exclusion zone.
Get out of town.
That have actually adapted to the high levels of, I mean, a slightly different type of radiation, obviously, not from the sun, but from the nuclear whoopsie daisy. But they actually have evolved to have higher levels of antioxidants. And that helps protect them from the radiation. And it actually, in some ways, it can make them even healthier because, like, they have a lot of antioxidants, so that can help in other ways. You know, the antioxidants will fight against free radicals, which is, like, when you have radiation, it knocks atoms loose that can, you know, little particles loose, and then that knocks into, like, your DNA and then causes problems. Mm-hmm. And so the antioxidants actually can, like, bind to these, like, take up these free electrons and then prevent that DNA damage. So these birds have developed more of these antioxidants. So I wonder if given enough time, if space birds would develop this.
I was just thinking that probably happened over many, many generations. They kind of developed that, not immunity, but that, benefit adaptation.
But I wonder if you took the antioxidant rich birds and sent them into space, if there would
yeah, it's interesting.
Let's send the Chernobyl birds to space.
We should send Chernobyl birds to space. Why hasn't anyone done this?
Sunscreen Chernobyl bird space. That's amazing.
So are you ready to take charge of your health journey? Look no further than Trinity School of Natural Health.
With their flexible online programs, you can receive the comprehensive education you need to care for your loved ones or step into the thriving field of natural health. Why choose Trinity? Because their programs offer more than just coursework. You'll interact with experienced instructors, connect with like-minded peers, and even participate in optional live events to hone your skills. If you've ever thought about becoming a certified natural health professional, the CNHP program at Trinity School of Natural Health is the perfect certification course. You'll equip yourself with the knowledge and skills to make a real difference in the lives of others. Turn your passion for natural health into a rewarding career. Visit trinityschool.org today to learn more about the Certified Natural Health Professional Certification Program. Go to trinityschool.org. That's trinityschool.org. Trinity School of Natural Health. Transform your life. Transform the world.
Snag a Job is where America goes to hire, with the deepest talent pool in hourly hiring. With access to over 6 million active hourly workers, Snag a Job is the all-in-one solution for hiring high-quality employees who can cover all your needs. On demand, temp to hire, part-time or full-time. You name the position: warehouse worker, retail associate, grocery store clerk, fitness trainer, baker, stylist, bellhop, podcast producer. Yeah, Snag a Job's got a worker for that. With our easy-to-use platform, you're able to seamlessly post and fill available positions quickly, with a dedicated customer support team to provide all the help you need along the way. Kind of nice knowing you have a talent pool like that in your own backyard, right? Snagajob is the partner you need to keep your business running smoothly. So visit snagajob.com or text SNAG to 242424 to talk to an expert. Snagajob.com, where America goes to hire.
Hey, this is Jody Sweetin from the podcast How Rude, Tanneritos. As a nostalgic voice from your past, I'm here to remind you that amongst the stressful and chaotic existence we live in 2024, you deserve to get away. It's time for a vacation, no matter when you're hearing this. And let me tell you how you'll get there. The 2024 Hyundai Santa Fe. Want to bring the family to the mountains with the Santa Fe's available H-Track all-wheel drive? Well, it's got standard third-row seating and available dual wireless charging pads for the kids who just want to stare at their phone and not talk to you. You know what I mean. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Do we have any other examples, or are they the main two?
It's really these two programs, like the apparent, and it's also experiments that apparently pretty much stopped after the early 90s, because in the Russian case, they decided that this basically proved quails didn't work as a food source for a long, years-long space mission, because part of the hope was, can we just breed quail as we go to Mars or the outer reaches of the galaxy, I guess. And they said, no, the quail are too weird in space. They don't do well.
And they're so cute.
Yeah, they're really
cute. Justice for the quails. Yeah.
It's a species called Japanese quail. I hadn't seen it before, but it's all over East Asia. It's very cute. It's great. And then the American experiment was mainly just to see what happens to chicken eggs in space. It wasn't like a long-term farming attempt, but the first main attempt was unfortunately a dozen fertilized chicken eggs sent up in 1986 on the Challenger space shuttle mission. So it exploded, and that ended.
Oh, that's really unfortunate.
And then in 1989, they sent 32 fertilized chicken eggs on the space shuttle Discovery. It was called the Chicken Embryo Development in Space Experiment, or short, Chicks in Space.
Nice.
CHIX. Like, they made a fun little acronym out of it.
Nerds love their acronyms.
Yeah. Wow. No, that's a good one, though. Gosh.
I'm annoyed at that one. That one's really good.
Yeah.
USA. And so
that's also such a room full of male astronauts.
Oh, yeah.
Chicks in Space.
Like, you're there alone. You're not allowed to fraternize. Chicken's gonna start to look a little sexy.
That's how they trick the astronauts. They're like, no, on this mission there's gotta be chicks in space. I guess it was really naive of me to think that this wouldn't have been a food program, but I'm curious, Katie, especially with some of your bird knowledge, what bird you would like to have seen in space or are curious about?
Ooh. I'd love to see a hummingbird in space, because they
oh, sh-
Wow.
Their method of movement is very different from other birds. Yeah. Their flight movement. I wonder if they would have more success. They have a very specific kind of thing where their wings create these little vortices, and there is air in the space station. Right, now, right. I don't think a hummingbird would do well in the vacuum of space, but on a space station, I'm wondering if there's enough sort of ambient air that they could generate their own little sort of controlled vortices.
Wow.
But I'm not sure if they would do well because they are very sensitive little creatures and they need to have food pretty constantly. So they would need to have some way to feed them pretty regularly. Yeah. And they're so delicate. I would be very interested to see if hummingbirds have more success flying in space.
That would be very interesting.
That's so cool.
I'd like to put up my suggestion as a Canada goose.
Is that just because you don't want them on Earth? You want them?
Because I would love to see the chaos that would ensue if a...
You don't want to do it for any reason other than just the chaos of it. I love that.
I think the sheer anger in them will cause them to be successful in space.
I'm again imagining 2001 A Space Odyssey, but Hal is played by an angry Canada goose.
Yeah.
Katie, I'm imagining Alien though, and it's just like the craning neck of the goose, like looking around corners and being like, wham,
honk.
What if it was that like ISS politics stuff where it's like, I mean, Canada built the arm, we have to let them send a goose, right? They build the arm, they get to send a goose. That's how it works. It's just you put in, you get out, you know.
Did they?
It's only fair.
This is such a specific question. I don't know if you know the answer. Could the birds make noise? Are they clucking normally? I don't know why. I'm interested.
Oh, can we set? Great question. No idea. Yeah. I think because the only hatched ones up there are the quails. So we don't know about chicken noises in space.
Oh.
They should technically be able to. They might. Again, if they don't have the learning process, I mean, that'd be very interesting because I'm sure they could make some noise. I don't know how much quails don't have that complex of songs. Their songs would probably be off, though, because they have nothing to kind of learn from, like with their calls. Not really songs, more like these calls. Mm-hmm. If you tried to put a songbird in space with no sort of a lot of learning, it would be very interesting. I think that would be another thing I'd like to see, sort of songbirds in space and to study sort of their although there's plenty of like ways to isolate songbirds on Earth and study how messed up we could get their songs to be,
but it's not cool unless it's in space.
Exactly.
I am imagining they don't have parents to learn from, but then astronaut Chris Hadfield starts playing the guitar and the bird just joins in and everyone's heart melts, you know?
They just learn a lot of David Bowie.
With the American chickens, so it's partly interesting with the radiation. This discovery mission orbited Earth for 5 days, went around 80 times, and then nothing hatched in space. But when they returned, we did hatch a chicken. And apparently they named the chicken Kentucky. And then as like a gag, not as a gag, they let it live at the Louisville Zoo in Louisville, Kentucky. But as a gag, they put up signage that said they were the original recipe of space chickens, which is like a KFC reference for folks who don't know American fast food.
But that's like, why they get them so tasty.
Yeah.
Put in space.
That's so cruel.
Yeah.
I love it.
This chicken should be a space hero, and instead we're going we bred and eat your family.
Yeah.
Right.
Delicious spices.
Like the mission was just for science, and then, you know, we did bits about frying them on Earth, you know? Crazy. Silly.
And the chicken was fine. Yeah, there was no... They carried on. They didn't die early or anything.
Yeah, it seems like the radiation didn't mess them up terribly. And yeah, they got to grow up with Earth gravity. So there's nothing, at least in the main source here is an amazing piece from Audubon. But that and other stuff, there's no word of any problems. Yeah.
Wow.
That's super interesting.
Oh my goodness.
But that's it. Yeah, like I didn't know anything about this. And apparently Audubon researched it because they did a Q&A in 2017 where somebody asked them if birds had been to space and they just said no. And then people brought up this stuff and they were like, no, there is actually this like little secret weird history of a few birds in space.
Wow.
That is so interesting. And I'm so curious to see what the future holds for birds going into space. I'm sure it's not the last time that we're going to try and bring them up. So that is so much fun.
I hope so.
So NASA and whatever the Russian space force is called, please take our birds into consideration.
We know you're listening. Yeah. We know you're Max Fun supporters. We'd like to order one hummingbird and one Canada goose, please.
Yeah. And be sure to link that Babies in Space episode y'all did in case people haven't heard it. Like that cockroach story especially. Wow. Amazing. Won't spoil it.
Thank you for coming onto our podcast and plugging our podcast.
This is how we get invited back.
God, I don't know what it was about them. I just love them so much.
So the first question I want to ask our guests was to ask Katie how her background in science influences her Twitter account, Birds Rights Activist, which at first I said mostly as a joke, but now having heard all of these bird facts, I also should say, fanning out a little bit because I was very late to Twitter. One of the first Twitter accounts I ever followed was Birds Rights Activist. And so when I made that connection, I lost my mind. But, you know, it is very interesting. And I feel like, you know, me and Ella and Caroline have a similar path of like from science into the science comedy world. And I'm curious how much of that both like informs how you do creative stuff and how much of it do you actually get to like use your some of those factoids and that science brain?
Yeah, I mean, I would say actually I've always loved birds. When I was really little, I would chase after them because I thought if I could like grab one, I could convince it to be my friend. I thought it just needed to listen to reason. So my mom would watch me just like run around the yard trying to chase after birds. I once tried to make a little like Wile E. Coyote trap where it was a box, a shoe box with some birds under it and a little stick and string. And I just like sat there. Nothing happened, but I sat there for a good 10 minutes.
I didn't know that Wile E. story. I love that so much. Wow.
That's incredible.
And then you tried dressing up as like a female bird and then...
Yeah.
I think they're so cute, but they're also so alien. And I love that. They are literally little dinosaurs. They're the only living dinosaur. And they, when you see like a ostrich or a rhea or a cassowary, you can really see these are dinosaurs. These are modern dinosaurs, yeah. Which I love that about them. But they are also really, there's something so funny about their behavior where they just are so self-obsessed and wonderful. And there's something so kind of unapologetically ostentatious about birds. The male birds of so many species just flaunting their beauty, doing all these things. They're like the most, I don't know, they're the most adorably arrogant species of animals. And I think that their personalities are always really interesting to me, and I've always been fascinated by it. And that's part of the reason I probably was interested in animals in general. I never really specifically studied bird behavior. It was just like sort of general evolutionary biology, general psychology, but I would go bird watching a lot, and I think they're alien enough from us, very different from mammals, that it is really fascinating to me to see so many of these behaviors that I empathize with, like really wanting to look pretty and, you know, like cocking your head all the time, like, am I pretty? Tell me I'm pretty.
Katie, just a little add-on question to that. Do you have a favorite bird song?
Oh, that's a really good question. Gosh. I mean, my favorite, this is not really a bird song, this is a bird call, but my favorite sort of juxtaposition of a bird call to what the bird looks like is peacocks, because peacocks are these beautiful, elegant birds, and then they do their call and it's just like, it's just the worst sound that you could ever hear. But yeah, I mean, there are, I think my favorite sort of fact about like a bird song or a bird sound is that there are these birds called the clubwing mannequins, and they are the only bird to do a thing called stridulation, which is how you a lot of insects produce sound using stridulation.
Yes.
It's where you actually rub two body parts together. Oh. Usually one has some ridges against it.
That's how crickets, right?
Exactly, yeah. Exactly. Like crickets, cicadas, and it can produce this really loud sound. And clubwing mannequins use these modified feathers and wings and rub these together very rapidly to create this like really interesting. It sounds like they're using their voice, though. It sounds like a like ooh, like, and it sounds beautiful. And it's like, but this is actually produced through stridulation, and they are so committed to the bit that they cannot fly good. Like, they have sacrificed being able to fly really well. Like, they can fly, but they're really clumsy and really awkward. And it's just amazing, and I love that they are such divas that they're like, I don't need to fly good, I just need to sound good.
I love that. I posted a video of the sound they make.
What?
That sounds just like that's incredible.
Yeah, just like it's singing, wow. But no, it's just rubbing them feathers together.
It's like, it sounds almost like a phone vibrating very high pitched. That's wild.
Birds are so weird.
And the physical movement is such a like speedy up and down. It looks like when a character is dancing in a children's computer animated movie. It does something weird. Like, it has very the movie Sing energy, you know? Like, it's, yeah.
I love the riz of birds.
Yeah.
The world's best rizzers. I've learned this. It's a new, I think it's a Gen Z thing, Zoomer thing. They say riz all the time. I'm so old, but.
Caroline's our resident Gen
Z. I'm the token Gen Z.
So
in the group.
Thank you. So riz, am I allowed to say riz as a millennial?
Yes. Go for it.
Okay.
Especially about birds.
Maybe just don't text it. Just say it.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Okay.
Oh, I have some apology texts to send. Okay.
And today we've got two guests with a ton of rings. It's Katie and Alex.
Okay, so I have a question for Alex now. So back in one of our episodes, Tom did a breakdown of emoji things, the history of emojis. It was wonderful. And he did mention that you came up with the buffalo emoji.
You specifically.
In my head, I'm like, how does someone I know came up with an emoji that people use? Like, that's wild to me. What's that? What?
And well, I also want to say, this is something that I actively didn't have time to include in that episode, was like the process of like making, like how a bill becomes a bill, how an emoji becomes an emoji. And so I did that purposefully because I knew one day we'd have you on.
Yeah.
It's all paying off. It was a really wonderful experience that it turns out anyone in the public can propose an emoji. It's not gated off to only specific people. And it oddly had a lot to do with podcasting. Like, I heard an episode it's called Welcome to Macintosh by Mark Bramhill, but then they featured it on 99% Invisible, hosted by Roman Mars, who at least one person on the show does an amazing impression
of. I'm Roman Mars.
There we go, Ed. And so they talked about him proposing the like person in lotus position emoji and all the genders of that. And it turns out there's this nonprofit called Unicode that's basically made of volunteers from all the big tech companies. And so if you go to them, write up a proposal and go through at least one round of back and forth with them, which was my experience. And also they were super friendly, super nice. But you basically need to make a convincing proposal. I think mine was like 18 pages of why this should be an emoji.
Holy shit. What? No, I'm sorry.
And parts of it were big pictures of graphs. It's cool, you know. But but yeah, once you basically convince them that it's a symbol that would have lasting usefulness, they will say yes or no and do it. And so I got to get the bison emoji set up.
A bison, sorry, not buffalo.
We talked about in the episode how like these are ostensibly permanent. Like they're in, once they're in the code, that they don't want to like reverse that. So this like longstanding, this is, I'm sure, takes 18 pages to convince. That's just, so
that's
funny.
That's such a legacy. That's an amazing legacy to have.
How was there like 18 pages worth of things to say?
Yeah, do you have an example of some of the kind of arguments you made?
Oh yeah, I learned in the process that I knew there was a North American bison. I learned there's a European bison as well. It's mostly in kind of Poland and Belarus, sort of in Eastern Europe and forests there. And it used to have a bigger range, but just human population growth pushed it out. And so I was like, it's an international symbol. This means various things to various cultures. And like Buffalo is the common American name for it. And so the city of Buffalo, New York, and a lot of different things like that were helpful. And I think I also picked on some other already included emoji. I was like, there's already two kinds of camel. How can there be no bison? You know, like you kind of look at the existing keyboard and
throwing shade.
How dare those camels?
That's so cool.
And it was a whole, I ended up making a mini podcast about it because there were also a lot of kind of personal things and elements related to it. Katie guests on the mini podcast and is wonderful and just a part about how bison are cool. But it was also partly that my dad really loved bison, and he also worked at a place in Illinois where there's like a particle accelerator, and then on top of the particle accelerator, they have prairie that's being restored and some bison, so we would go see those and stuff. But like after he passed away, I thought about what's a thing I can do, and that was a thing I could do, was a bison emoji.
That's so sweet.
You know.
Also, I hope that was a line in the proposal. My dad really liked them.
I think I threw it at the end, but yeah. It would be funny if I revealed that like Unicode's super interested in dads. They want to know. Tell them about your dad.
That's the secret. You got to submit on Father's Day.
Yeah.
I'm thinking for a bonus episode now, each of us should write a paper on an emoji that we could propose.
You want me to write a paper for a bonus episode?
You want me to write 18 pages on a symbol? I don't think so, Tom.
Let's Learn Everything Discord users. Come and tell us what proposal Let's Learn Everything should write as a, for an emoji, and we can do it together.
The double middle finger emoji. I'm trying to think, like, what's us? What's our?
Yeah.
But it is like, before I did it and heard about it, I really thought there would be some kind of like, you need to know computers or you need to work in a tech company.
Someone to stop me.
Yeah. But you can just do it. And there's public guidelines for how to do it.
That's wild.
I love that.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
I feel like I want to go and read the public guidelines just to see.
I know, I feel like I want to try now, but I can't think of anything that I would.
Interesting. You guys want to write a paper for, sounds like, for both content.
But there must be so many proposals for emojis.
I can't imagine. I think
it's amazing that your emoji got selected and will be looked at by future archaeologists trying to decode our hieroglyphics of the 21st century.
Yeah, that's such a good way to look at it.
When the bison are all extinct, that'll be what remains.
Whoa.
When it's aliens, but those aliens turn out to be birds that we shot off into space and who evolved.
It's all coming together. It's all one thing.
They come back to Earth and they're like, God damn it, you blew it all to hell.
You damn dirty apes. It's just a giant bison emoji for some reason in the sand. I don't know how emojis work. One question I do want to ask is, because y'all have been on and hosted and started and guested on just a slew of podcasts, and I'm just curious how your podcast journey, how happened, how do
come together?
Oh yeah,
yeah.
I guess both. Go ahead. Yeah.
Then you go ahead.
Oh.
Look at us go.
So I'll tell the story. Don't worry.
Perfect. Thank you.
You ran into each other at a bookstore, and you crashed into each other, and you're helping each other pick up books, and you're like, oh, this is on animals. Oh, this is on history. And then
we kept going. No, you go ahead. No, you go ahead. We're born to be podcasters.
Yeah, the secret is politeness, you know. But I, a lot of it is probably we both worked at a website called Cracked.com that is not really gone anymore, but like I got there through doing social media stuff and making GIFs and editing, writing, like a lot of other things I was doing, and then they had a podcast and contributed to that, and then got to host a podcast for them for a while, and so the start of it was basically working at comedy websites for me.
Yes.
Yeah. And then I got to meet Katie there because they, especially, I remember when she was like getting hired, especially somebody said, the pro bird rights person might be willing to work here. That'd be amazing if we could.
Might be willing.
Like possibly get their help with things, you know?
I want you to continue, but I just have to just very quickly highlight that you said GIF.
Yeah.
And that's very upsetting to me. I know that.
Oh, all right. Yeah. It's a whole thing, but yeah.
We'll fix it in post. Don't worry.
Yeah, yeah. We're going to edit.
GIF.
We're a strong GIF team here. So
we really are.
I don't know. Can't be mixing.
I think this does mean that you're not allowed to come back, to be honest, after that one.
Sorry. You can renounce your ways and see the truth, and maybe then you can come back on.
Can we plug your show again?
Yes.
Have you guys heard of a show called Let's Learn Everything?
Let's Learn Everything. Yeah, I was just talking about that. Yeah.
They say GIF.
It's really good. They're all really charming.
Okay. Oh. All right, but watch yourself.
Yes, thanks. Okay, right, you can stay a bit longer.
You're allowed. Yeah. Yeah.
Sorry, I completely interrupted you.
No, I think, Alex, I think we bonded initially over our mutual respect for Peanuts comics.
That's right. Yeah.
And I would draw a sort of dark version of Peanuts.
Oh my god.
Like 100% so just to get Alex's goat because he was such a Peanuts appreciator. So I did a version where Snoopy just was a huge bully.
And that's great.
You know, I think that we started collaborating more after that and eventually podcasting.
Oh, wow.
I'm a humongous fan of Peanuts and Snoopy, and there might be slight typing sounds in me right now because I'm looking for the tweet where there's a bunch of Katie's comics, but they're great. It's Snoopy being a dark figure, like he kind of is in the real strips, where he just pushes Charlie Brown around. It's great.
We'll put a link. We'll put a link to that in the show notes, so you could go and look at Katie's.
All great friendships start with an amazing bit.
Yeah. Yeah.
It doesn't start with politeness. It starts with Snoopy being a bully.
Our relationship, the three of us, definitely didn't start with politeness. No. So
correct.
We could, yeah.
Shall we do some plugs and shout outs?
Yeah. Were you going so high? Anyone got any plugs and shout outs?
Keep going up and up and up.
Like, I just did positive gestures, and I think that forced Caroline to keep speaking. I'm sorry. Yeah.
And one more for the dogs listening.
Thank you both so, so much. Before we go, plug yourselves, plug your podcast. Where can the people find you?
Well, have you heard of this podcast called Let's Learn Everything?
I swear to God.
An amazing host. Invites genius guests.
top quality for sure.
No, but actually plug yourself.
Actually,
yeah,
plug yourself.
Yeah. And we're so excited to be on Maximum Fun with y'all, and making Secretly incredibly fascinating. Folks can search the word Secretly in their app. It's the red one that comes up, but it's a joy to make it. And then Katie's amazing podcast on her own is Creature Feature, about animals and science and more.
About animals, not always in space though.
Yeah,
sometimes on Earth. Most of the time, actually, on Earth.
Oh, unfortunately.
Disappointing.
That's disappointing, isn't it? Yeah. Yeah.
Earth is so boring.
So boring.
What's even on Earth?
Yeah.
Bunch of worms and stuff.
There is actually, I hear there is one pretty good podcast that is hosted on Earth, actually.
Just the one, Tom?
Yeah.
Which one is it?
And we won't say. You have to listen to all three of them to find out.
It's a secret.
Lee, incredibly fascinating.
Oh.
Oh, my God.
99% invisible. Saying podcast.
Okay.
Okay. And then are there any socials that we'd like to plug as well for the two of you?
Yeah, pro bird rights. But also... Alex Schmidtstagram on Instagram, and I have not really ramped up on TikTok much yet, but Alex Schmitty on TikTok, and then it's Sif Pod on everything for Secretly Incredibly Fascinating.
You got some great riz on there.
Yeah. Oh, such riz.
It's I'm trying to
manage it so I can handle it, you know? Jeez. Yeah.
I'm also on Blue Sky now. I've done some bird tweets on there. So,
wow.
Oh, I got some invite codes if you guys want to get on there.
Tom and Caroline are just approaching the camera very slowly and menacingly, I would like to add.
But yeah, thank you. truly think y'all so much learned a ton and also had a bunch of chaotic fun. This is a delight. Y'all are amazing.
I love it. I love the chaos of this episode. It was wonderful. Thank you so much for coming.
Thank you so much for having us. Blast. This was wonderful.
So on this episode, we have learnt all about the birds that have gone into space. They can't fly there, but humans have taken them there and they have done some weird things trying to fly around in there. We have learnt about Katie's background in birds, the lover birds, the trying to trap birds, and how that led to her amazing Twitter account. And also learn about the process, the 18-page long application to get the bison to be an emoji. Join us next time where we will learn about
everything.
Let's Learn Everything is a Maximum Fun podcast hosted and produced by Ella Hubber, Tom Lump, and Caroline Roper, with editing and music by the wonderful and talented Tom Lump.
Join us next time where we will learn.
And we all say it.
About.
We all say it. Ready?
Well, everything. We all say everything.
And we all say everything.
Everything. Everything.
Everything.
That was really funny.
I'm saying it again.
We should start telling people that in advance before we get to that point.
No.
This has happened almost every time we've had a guest. We're like, okay, this is happening now. It's happening. And the guests are all like, what's happening?
I just didn't think of myself as getting able to do it, you know? So that's great. Yes.
Yeah, I thought you have permission.
No,
you have permission.
Yeah.
Am I a part of things or am I not a part of things?
You're always a part of things.
Maximum Fun, a worker-owned network
of artist-owned shows
supported
directly
by you.
Are you ready to take charge of your health journey? Look no further than Trinity School of Natural Health. With their flexible online programs, you can receive the comprehensive education you need to care for your loved ones or step into the thriving field of natural health. Why choose Trinity? Because their programs offer more than just coursework. You'll interact with experienced instructors, connect with like-minded peers, and even participate in optional live events to hone your skills. If you've ever thought about becoming a certified natural health professional, the CNHP program at Trinity School of Natural Health is the perfect certification course. You'll equip yourself with the knowledge and skills to make a real difference in the lives of others. Turn your passion for natural health into a rewarding career. Visit trinityschool.org today to learn more about the Certified Natural Health Professional Certification Program. Go to trinityschool.org. That's trinityschool.org. Trinity School of Natural Health. Transform your life. Transform the world.
Hey, guys. Back at the playground again, huh?
Yep. You know what this playground could use? A wine country.
Heck yeah. And some waves. So we could go surfing.
Oh, yeah. Ah, love that.
A redwood forest would be cool.
I'm in.
Ah, ski slopes.
Let's do it.
Can a girl go shopping?
Yeah, baby.
Wait. Did we just invent California?
Discover why California is the ultimate playground at visitcalifornia.com.
Get in zone. AutoZone.
Welcome to AutoZone. What are you working on today?
I got to change the oil in my car.
Right now, get 5 quarts of Pennzoil Platinum Full Synthetic with an STP Extended Life Oil Filter for only $36.99.
Get in zone. What do I do with my old oil?
We can recycle your used oil for free.
Get in zone.
And do you have oil for my old work truck?
You can find the right high mileage oil to help it go farther right here at AutoZone.
Get in zone. AutoZone.
Restrictions apply.